Hey guys, it's Hannah, and you are listening to the Hannah Farooqui Show. Today we have with us Michelle Dickinson. Michelle is a well-being strategist and has been featured speaker for leading platforms like ABC, Forbes, Landmark, to mention a few. Michelle is a very passionate mental health advocate, a TEDx speaker, and an author too. Welcome to the show, Michelle. It's absolutely a delight to have you on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, Hannah. Thank you for inviting me.
So Michelle, mental health was somewhere like don't ask and don't tell subject at work. But now we see due to COVID-19, I think the silver lining is that in the pandemic, we are seeing a lot of people are being very vocal about mental health, and they are taking a step forward and they're realizing the importance of it. But we are still so much behind to keep in check with the overall well-being of performance at work. So individuals who have been working from home prior to COVID, they have either become less efficient in their performance or have become more like productivity gurus. Or on the other hand, it has been quite challenging for individuals who have worked in corporate setting. They feel that 9 to 5 is perfect for us rather than, you know, working from home. It has become more like productivity contest. Oh my God, are you doing this? Are you not doing this? How do you think we should find a middle ground?
You know, that is one of the biggest challenges with this pandemic is people working from home are working longer hours, right? And they're burnt out. The reality is they're burnt out and they don't have boundaries. Like, we've lost our boundaries. We used to be in the morning, you get in your car, you go to your office. Right. That would be the first bookend. You'd leave the office, you drive home, and that'd be the other bookend. But now working from home, like, you could work around the clock, you could work all day, then you can have dinner and then you can go back to work. And it's just too much. People are not getting the breaks. They're not getting the downtime. They're not recharging themselves. So it's very easy for people to burn out. I mean, that's the biggest challenge, is we have to start to remember, you know, what are our personal boundaries? Where does the line in the sand, where is the line that you know, you start work and then you end work and you go back to your family and you do things to nurture yourself, to rest yourself, to recharge yourself so you can come back intentional with your work? Because at a certain point, you're no good for your home life or for your work life if you are working too much. So we have to have those boundaries. We have to be sticklers about it. And leaders and organizations need to model that. You know, leaders have the ability to set the tone through not sending that email at 9 p.m., through waiting and sending that email tomorrow morning, and not expecting, having the subliminal, like, well, I'm going to email you now, so I would hope you would respond, when really it's off hours. So we have an opportunity for leaders to model good boundaries and for us to set our own boundaries and you know, take care of our well-being, because without that, nothing matters.
Absolutely. And how do you think that usually women who are working women, working moms, for kids, it's like when they see mom at home, they feel like, oh my God, I think it's a holiday, because kids at that age cannot really, you know, identify what's going on, what's happening, why is mom and dad at home? And for working moms, and that has been quite difficult for them. What do you have to say to them? How can they communicate with their children about the boundaries? Of course, if there's a teenager or young adults, we can explain them. And I think they are very much aware of it. But how do you think when it comes to toddlers, how do you think parents should set that boundaries?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to create the structure so that you're not blending everything in together. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, It's one of those things where, you know, if a mom has to work and their child is at home, like, what is the setup? What is the structure? Mm-hmm. And because ultimately our little ones look for us to set the structure. Mm-hmm. So what is that structure for them? And, you know, delineating that this is the time for you to do this while I do this. And then we have our free time, you know, and then we have our family time. But we have to set that tone. We have to be mindful of helping them understand when it is time for us to, you know, play or have fun versus when, even though I'm home, I have to be doing, you know, A, B, and C. Mm-hmm.
In your experience, what are some of the major concerns around well-being for employees, managers, and organizations? How can we navigate through it? And now it is like more like hybrid work style.
Yeah, so it's twofold, right? It's, I mean, I'm going to go back to what I said before about burnout. It's very easy for us to work ourselves around the clock and not create that healthy boundary and make our well-being a priority. Like, we have to make our well-being a priority. It's sort of like the oxygen mask in the airplane. If we don't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of our work. We can't take care of our families. We can't do anything to the best of our ability, the way we want to show up. We're not preserving our well-being. So we have to make the time for ourselves. So it partially falls on our shoulders, but then it also falls on the shoulders of the organization and the leaders and the leadership. So as individuals, we have to have structures. What is our structure? How are we coordinating so that we make the time for ourselves? When are we going to exercise? When are we going to, you know, turn off our computers and make sure we get enough sleep? And what are we doing to relax? What are we doing? Because, you know, stress is a fact of life and cortisol is what happens from stress. So how are we managing that cortisol so we're not compounding that in our bodies? Are we going and taking a meditation, doing a meditation? Are we doing a yoga? Are we getting a massage? What are we doing to have that cortisol dissipate out of our body so we're not compounding that? So we have to do that. But then in the workplace, our leaders need to be modeling that behavior. What is good mental health hygiene? What is good work-family balance? You know, if our leaders are demonstrating, you know, no, I stop work at 6 o'clock at night. That's my family time. Well, that's wonderful. That gives me permission to say at 6 o'clock at night, it's my family time. Mm-hmm. So we take our cues from what our leaders are doing as much as what they're telling us to do. So, and it goes back to culture. What is the organization's culture? What is it, a culture that makes employee health a priority? The full employee health, not just physical, mental, emotional. Is that a priority? Is that a value of the company? What resources does the company have for mental health support? You know, what resources are available? Are they promoting them? Are they encouraging people to tap into EAPs, to tap into benefits? Like, what is that like? So it's twofold. It comes to the organization has responsibility and the leaders in the organizations. And then we have to own our well-being too. And maybe the organization isn't a fit for us for what we know we deserve in terms of our mental and emotional health. And maybe that's not an organization that fits where our values are. So we have an opportunity to assess that as well.
Also, what do you have to say to leaders? Because they have like additional stressors. It is not just about the employees, but also their supervisors whom they have to report to. And they also have to look into with the governmental guidelines, policy and measures. There are a lot of things that managers and supervisors and leaders has to check in. How do you think they should find a balance? What do you have to suggest to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think every job has stressors and every leader has stressors, and we're human beings. We're not robots. We're not factory workers, you know, like we're not machines in a factory, mm-hmm. rather. So as leaders who are setting the tone in the organization, no matter how much stress we're under, we can't perform any different or any better if we're not at optimal ourselves, if we're not healthy ourselves. So those leaders that are under immense pressure, it's even more important for them to be checking in with themselves and asking themselves how they're doing, how they're really doing, and not ignoring how they're doing. If they're struggling, if they're, you know, if they didn't eat something healthy, or if they didn't, you know, go and take care of their physical health that day, or they didn't, you know, do some type of relaxation so that they can reground themselves. Like, they have to do that even more. It's even more important because they carry the burdens of other mm-hmm. responsibilities than the individual employee. So, and they're modeling, right? So people watch a leader. They watch what they do. They watch what they say. They watch their habits and their behaviors, and they're looking at them, whether it's through video or face-to-face, they're looking at them to see how healthy they are, you know? So they have a tremendous responsibility to take care of themselves.
Also with the startup culture, there are a lot of people who are, you know, establishing their business and setting up after the COVID-19. And what do you have to suggest to them? How do you think when they are starting their business, how do you think they can set up a right EAP program? Because they themselves are not coached up and they themselves are not trained. What do you have to say to them?
You know, startups are in a really unique scenario. Because they may not have the means to offer the sun and the stars to their people because they're in such a lean mode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's tremendous free resources out there. And in the program that I deliver to my clients called Protecting Our Happy, I give a host of free resources for mental health and mental well-being. Mm-hmm. And so it could be as simple as pulling up different resources that are available and serving them up to their people. And, you know, I may not be able to provide them with, you know, the best care right now in terms of benefits or EAP, but what I can do is give them resources where they can tap into that are free, right? So like one that comes to my mind immediately is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org. NAMI is a tremendous free resource and it's local in many communities. People can tap into that. So depending on where you live, you can easily find mental health resources that are available in your community.
What, according to you, constitutes a good well-being across individuals' working life? What do you think? Okay, I can see this person who is, you know, leading through.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a couple of things that come to mind. It's being self-aware, right? Knowing when we're not doing well and having the ability to reach out for support, right? So self-awareness is absolutely important. Having people that you connect with so you don't isolate on a daily routine, you know, like it's very easy as an entrepreneur, solopreneur, or a startup owner to be very isolated. Mm-hmm. So it's having people to connect to. It's making your physical health a priority and even having a meditation practice so that you're managing your stress because it can be highly stressful. So do you have some type of a practice that can help you resolve some of that stress that is naturally going to be a byproduct of what you're doing? So it's that. And it's also making sure that you're getting enough rest, like that you have good sleep hygiene, that you're sleeping consistently, because when we have a brain imbalance, oftentimes it's triggered by a lack of rest and renewal and sleep. So, yeah.
Also, when we see a lot of companies who are having EAP program, that is employee assistance program, how do you think, but that is very generalized manner. How do you think that individuals can take a tailored approach? What is your suggestion?
It seems as though generic EAPs are giving generic advice and it doesn't fit. So, and understand the EAP is really just an access for employees to call someone, right? That bridges them to care, to the right care, right? Because at the end of the day, if you're calling EAP, chances are you probably should be finding a therapist, right? And EAP is sort of like conduit to get you to care. There are other ways though that you can go about being reminded of things that you can be doing. I mean, like I mentioned, all the free resources out there. I mean, if you're concerned about your health and you want to talk to someone because you're not feeling 100%, there's so many free resources out there to help connect you to a therapist or give you preliminary advice before connecting to a therapist. You know, telemedicine is a great resource. My Wellbeing or Talkspace. My Wellbeing will connect you to a doctor, but Talkspace is telemedicine. So maybe you just need to hop on a call real quick with a therapist and have a conversation. But you're right, it's not one size fits all. It's just designed to help people get from point A to point B.
And Another thing is I see a lot of people who wants to venture into corporate well-being as a corporate. They want to venture as in a corporate well-being coach and they want to take their studies forward. What do you have to suggest to them with all the experience you have had with the tremendous expertise? What do you have to suggest to them? Can any individual from any, educational background can venture into it?
I think you have to find out what it is you really want to do and find out what the requirements are when you want to do it, right? You have to find out, like, if there is an opportunity that you want to pursue, well, what are they looking for? There's many different philosophies around well-being, right? There are some philosophies that say, you can't help someone unless you have, X amount of credentials behind your name. Mm-hmm. And then other organizations are like, no, I just need my people to feel comfortable tapping into my resources. Mm-hmm. So do you really need to be a clinician for that? If you're really just trying to help them utilize what you're already paying for, probably not. So you got to figure out sort of where your sweet spot is and what opportunities that get you excited mm-hmm. are requiring. And then that'll help you understand, do I need to do more? Do I need to get more knowledge?
So another question that I had, like when I was reading your profile, was something really fascinating is that you wrote a book. So what made you write a book? And what was that eureka moment? Oh my God, I think I should write it. And how was the experience like? I want to know the entire process from the idea to the final product as a book. How is the experience like? And what made you write that?
You are so cute. So it started on the TED stage, right? When I told my story about caring for my mother who was bipolar, people started to just come out from the darkness and want to talk to me. They wanted to talk about, I had a loved one, or my mother was sick, or my father, I think he was depressed, but never diagnosed. So a lot of people came out and wanted to talk about it. And I just thought to myself, this is tremendous. By just going first, by just telling my story and going first, this is what can happen. So I said, well, what would happen if I actually wrote my book? What if I actually wrote the story and beyond the TED stage, what would happen? So I sat down and I wrote the book. It took me 4 years to write the book. And it was incredibly hard, very, very cathartic, because in order for me to fulfill on the mission of the book, and the mission of the book was, I wanted to humanize mental health and mental illness for the person that had no relationship to mental illness. So they could understand it and maybe extend a little bit of compassion for those suffering in the world. So that was my goal. And in order to do that, I had to really walk them through each experience with my mother so that they could realize that my mother was just someone who was hurting because of her illness, and she wasn't evil, but her behavior had the ability to be evil. So it took 4 years. I worked alongside a writing coach who helped me. She was my coach. And then I self-published it, and it's been out for years now. And I still get messages from people who find my book and read it, and they feel very connected to it because they have a story that's similar, or I've put into words their experience with their loved one. So it's been an amazing experience.
Can you please touch upon a point while writing a book where you thought, should I include this thing? Didn't you feel vulnerable about talking about certain things, because there are certain things that you want to keep it secret, and not everybody wants to be very vocal about it? So how was it like, and how did you navigate through it?
Yeah, it was really hard in many regards to say, well, what is it that I want to share? I mean, I chose to write the book after my mother passed away because I didn't want to upset her. And then I also chose to write the book like I wasn't going to write another book, right? So I wanted it all out. I didn't want to try to hold anything back for version two or the sequel, whatever. I just wanted it all out there because I was like, I'm writing one book and I want this one book to represent me and my story vividly. So that means I have to put it out there. So yeah, if it was part of the mental health experience of my mother, I put it in there. I didn't hesitate.
And how does it feel now? Like once you put everything out there, like the whole world is now reading, how do you feel now?
I know a lot of people know me. It's weird, Hannah, because so many people come up to me and they're like, I feel like I know you. I've read your book. I feel so connected. Right. I'm sorry, what was your name? Because I don't know you. Like, tell me why.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to get, like, why do you think you know me? Tell me why, you know? It's wild. It's really wild. And the difference that I feel the book has made is what is so fulfilling for me. Like, I remember getting a letter from a 16-year-old girl who read the book and said, my mother is bipolar and your story just gave me hope, just gave me tremendous hope. And I was like, oh my goodness. Wow. Because she's like, I know I'm going to be okay if you're okay. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. So like why writing it, if there is someone who is listening who is willing to write their book and from their own experiences, what do you have to say to them? What are some of the major lessons that you have had while writing? Of course, like just recollecting those memories, I think that is quite heavy, and writing it down is quite a task. And what do you have to tell to them? What are the, and while writing during that process, again, that's a journey in itself. And it can be quite intimidating as well. So what do you have to suggest to them? Do you think that have boundaries while writing? They need to consider a few things, anything of that sort that you want to say?
I think you have to get connected to why you're writing the book.
Hmm.
Like begin with the end in mind. Begin with the end in mind. What is your overarching goal with the book? Hmm. Who are you hoping to reach? Because ultimately we all have a journey. My journey was my mother who was sick. You have a journey. Everybody has a journey.
Right.
And if our journeys can help lighten the load for someone coming behind us, then we should write the book. We should write it. But you have to be really clear on what is your goal with the book? When you have that final book in your hand, what do you want to see happen with that book? And that's going to help you focus on how you write the book, right? Mm-hmm. If your goal is to help people, if your goal is to educate people, if your goal is to expose something, whatever it is, you have to be really present to what is the end game for you? And then that'll help sort of guide you. That'll be your North Star.
Okay, with all the experiences that you have had, what do you think success is? Like now everyone is redefining what success and failure is after this pandemic. They're revisiting what their real values, their core beliefs are. So what do you think, you being a well-being strategist, you with amazing expertise, what do you have to say on that?
I think we get to define what success is for ourselves, right? And for me, it's, you know, success for me has to have an element of fulfillment, right? You can sort of, I mean, my story is very simple. Like I worked in a corporate job for 19 years and I was successful in the fact that I had security.
Mm-hmm.
But what was missing for me was fulfillment. And that was the ability to be a contribution to people's lives and help them with my story. And so now my pursuit is I definitely will never do work that is not fulfilling for me. It needs to be fulfilling. That's priority for me. So we all define success differently, but I think we need to be grounded in what it is for us. And for me, it was, I want to be a contribution in the world that will be fulfilling for me.
Did you have to unlearn anything during this process?
Yeah, how to be an entrepreneur. I worked in a corporate job for 19 years. I don't know what I'm doing as an entrepreneur. I'm just learning as I go. Yeah. And so you would say, well, how are you doing it? Like, yeah. I realized if I want to go where other people have gone, I have to surround myself I have to surround myself with people who have gone where I want to go. So I have a coach, I have a mastermind group, a collection of entrepreneurs, and I'm constantly learning every day.
Yeah. And what is that one thing that you look forward to and that keeps you going?
Something that keeps me going.
Yeah.
That I know in my heart, there are so many people that are suffering. You know, we look at this pandemic and the mental health impact it's had on people. With so many people dealing with depression and anxiety, there are too many people suffering. And when people suffer in silence, that's what scares me, because then they lose hope. If they lose hope, then they're at risk. We're at risk of losing them. So what keeps me going is helping. My goal is to reduce the suffering of people struggling with any type of a mental health challenge in isolation. Right. So if I can expose this conversation and start having people understand why we have to talk about mental illness so we don't lose more people to suicide, like that's what gets me going. That's what gets me excited. That's why I do what I do, is because if I could reach one person with one tool, one person with one resource, maybe they won't feel like they're alone in their suffering.
And one last question before we end is that, what advice would you like to give to anyone, to any listeners? Yeah.
So if you're suffering in silence, you don't have to suffer in silence. There are people out there that care. There are listeners out there who will listen to you. You are not alone. It's so common right now. 1 in 3 Americans are dealing with depression or anxiety because of the pandemic. It's very common, yet we don't talk about it. So know that you're not alone. There's always someone who will listen to you, whether it's a listening line, a crisis line, somebody will listen to you. You're not alone in your suffering. And check in on those around you. Don't assume that the people in your life are all perfect and they're okay, or they look good on social media. Check in on them, because by you checking in on them, it could make all the difference for them. They might be suffering in silence, but if we can learn as human beings to extend our compassion to those around us, we can help one another to not suffer.
Thank you. That was quite a wonderful advice to everyone. Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you so much for your time. It was really great to have you on the.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation to be with you today. It was a pleasure to be with you.